Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. A disease disproportionately impacting African Americans is getting new attention under the coronavirus pandemic. This is National Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and tonight we look at the increased risk of having the disease under COVID and the new hope for treatment. My guests are Nicole William Militsitz. She sits on the advisory board of the Howard University Center for Sickle Cell Disease, and Dr. James Taylor VI. He's director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question about sickle cell disease. If you are struggling with the disease, know someone who does, we certainly want to hear from you tonight. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher, and the phone lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Nicole, Dr. Taylor, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
How are you, Harold?
I'm doing just fine, thank you, and I hope that you all are as well. Nicole, I want to start with you because you are not just on the advisory board, but you have sickle cell disease. Can you kind of talk to us, for those who aren't really familiar with it? It has not been in the headlines as much, obviously because of COVID and other high-profile ailments that people are impacting. So talk to me about what you've experienced and what it is.
Well, sickle cell is an inherited blood disorder. For my experience, I was diagnosed with sickle cell at birth, and that was from my maternal grandparents' side. They actually were both carriers of sickle cell trait and did not know it at the time. And so it wasn't until they had their first child, which was born with sickle cell disease. Mm-hmm. In regards to what we go through as patients, I would definitely say there are times when we have painful crises or painful episodes that cause us to either try and manage our pain either at home or to manage our pain within the emergency room or within the hospital.
Pain how? Pain where?
Well, it can be anywhere, but predominantly happens within the joints. So basically when the sickle cells are actually not traveling within the bloodstream the way that they should be, as the way that normal cells travel, they actually will produce pain when they clot, when they actually stop moving in different locations. And that could be in knees, back, arms, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the pain is not something that is planned on. You never know when the pain is going to occur. And it happens.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Taylor, can you talk to me from a clinical perspective of what sickle cell is?
So as Nicole said, it's an inherited blood disease. It's caused by a mutation in a hemoglobin gene. It's a very insidious mutation. So in Africa, if you have sickle cell trait, that is one copy of the mutation, you're protected from malaria. It's very important because malaria is one of the top five killers of children in Africa. That's why sickle cell exists. If you're a carrier, it's an advantage. If you live in Africa where there's malaria transmission, if you have two copies of the mutation. That mutation, when oxygen is off hemoglobin, it causes long strands of hemoglobin to form, and that misshapes the red cell into a half moon crescent, hence the name sickle. It looks like a sickle. And those rigid blood cells clog up blood vessels, just as Nicole said. And it can occur, that clogging can occur anywhere, in the fingers, in the low back, and the blood-forming bones like your ribs and your chest, your breastbone, those are very common sites of pain, but it can occur anywhere. How do we treat it? Well, for the last 100 years, we've really only given supportive care to people, IV fluids and pain medications. And when I talk about pain medications, I mean opioids like morphine given intravenously. Those are very powerful drugs, but that's how intense the pain is. And I guess I have one story. This was told to me by one of my department chairs during my training. He had a sickle cell patient who came into the emergency room, but not for sickle cell disease. He had broken his leg, and he had a compound fracture, which means that his leg bone, his femur, had been snapped in two.
Mm.
And he asked the patient, how does this compare to a sickle cell pain crisis? And the response was, it's almost as bad as a sickle cell pain crisis. So those of us who are doctors, a fractured bone like that's, you know, that's the worst pain that we can imagine. And the patient's response is, it's almost as bad. And I think that holds true from what I've seen from the other side of the bed.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is National Sickle Cell Awareness Month. We're talking about the disease. We're talking about it in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as what the latest treatments may mean for those who suffer from it. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Winnetta, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Oh, okay. I have a son who, he's an adult now. He's 32 years of age, and he has sickle cell SS. So raising him was an extremely difficult ordeal in terms of dealing with the disease on an ongoing basis. Now that he is an adult, he's finding it very, very difficult to be able to get regular treatment outside of the D.C. area. He has to go to Johns Hopkins in order to get what they call an exchange, and also to go to an infusion center when he goes into pain. Do you have those types of resources at Howard University? Because when we've tried to make connection, we can't seem to get an answer as to whether you have those programs available.
So Johns Hopkins is an institution I'm very familiar with, and I know both the adult providers and the pediatric physicians there. Exchange transfusions, yes, that is one of our five mainstays of therapy that's available for sickle cell disease, and that's been available for decades. And for the right patient, that can be a really life-changing type of treatment. And as you said, it requires coming in on a regular basis monthly to get those exchange transfusions. So basically, we take all the blood out and we put in new blood, and it lasts about a month or 6 weeks. And that can dramatically reduce these episodes of pain. Johns Hopkins has really been a leader on one front, and that is their day hospital, and that's the infusion center. So instead of going to the emergency room, where many patients go, you go to see the hematologist and the hematology team in the infusion center, where we know the patients and treat them accordingly. Howard does not have that quite set up. It's something I've been working on diligently for a few years now. It is very expensive to set up such a program, but the exchange transfusions, certainly we have them. And anybody who cares for sickle cell patients, I see two patterns of what patients do. Some patients like to be anonymous, and I can understand that. So they'll go to lots of different emergency rooms, so nobody really knows who you are. In one way, that's good, but The downside is it really influences your care and you get no continuity. Nobody really knows your case. So if something important needs to be identified, it's often missed. The benefits of going to a single emergency room is people know who you are. The downside is emergency rooms are busy places and often sickle cell is not the priority. So someday we'll have this at Howard as far as a day hospital, but certainly this is something we know it reduced costs, it reduced wait times for patients, and results in better pain management.
Juanita, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about sickle cell disease and treatments and the impact that the pandemic has had on it. Before I get into some of these other topics, I would like to ask Dr. Taylor, what is sickle cell SS?
Sickle cell SS. So,
as in Frank Sam?
Like Sam.
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 Okay, go right ahead, please.
So the S refers to the sickle mutation, and SS means you have two copies of it. There are other mutations that cause sickle cell disease. And you have to have one copy of sickle and then something else. It gets very complex. There's another common form called SC. So you have one copy of sickle, one copy of C, and it results in a milder, quote-unquote milder disease. We say that, but I think if you talk to any of the patients and tell them their disease is mild, you're going to get into trouble because when they have crisis, it's just like somebody with SS. SS is the most severe form. We see more common pain episodes, strokes, pneumonias, those types of complications, more common in that form of the disease. But there are a collection of other forms of sickle cell disease.
202.
As a sickle cell patient, I've talked to many people who have SS and SC and sickle beta thal, and the pain is the same no matter the mutation. Still suffering from the same side effects of the disease, and continues to be a struggle no matter what type of sickle cell it is.
And that's why I don't care for the term SC being a milder form of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Because
just
it
different.
Really affects people's lives in a significant way, the same as somebody like Nicole.
You know, Nicole, every year the Howard University Center for Sickle Cell has, you know, events to raise awareness, and we are now under a pandemic, and even though things are changing, you know, there are still significant restrictions. But there are some things that are still coming up before the end of the month. Would you mind taking a few moments to share with us what the center is doing?
Sure, yes. You know, typically, like you were saying, this time of the year, we would be preparing for our annual 5K run or walk around the campus of Howard University. And this year, in light of the pandemic, we have turned virtual. And so we are celebrating or actually doing a Cure Sickle Cell Now Move On event, which is happening for the entire month of September.
So what does that entail?
Still register for that event. It is still taking place. And virtual events include yoga, Pilates. There's been some boxing classes. Boot camps, and we've also had some guest DJs as well. So feel free to go to eventbrite.com and register for that. It's free.
Where, again, you said Eventbrite.
Eventbrite.com.
Those Eventbrite websites can be a little long. What should they look for under Eventbrite?
They should go under Cure Sickle Cell Now, Move On Event.
Cure Sickle Cell Now. Move On Event.
Yes.
If you search hashtag cure sickle cell now, you should pick it up on any search engine.
All right. Sounds good. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Bernard, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My wife has a sickle cell disease, and we used to go to the clinic on Georgia Avenue, and I was wondering, why did they close that clinic down on Georgia Avenue right there beside Howard University Hospital? Dr. Castro was the doctor, used to see her, and eventually the clinic was closed. And right now she has tremendous pain. I mean, her shoulders are deteriorating, her hips are deteriorating, and stuff like that. So I was wondering what my choice is in terms of treatment beside replacement joints and at this time.
So the building on Georgia Avenue was torn down, and the downside to that was there used to be a sign on Georgia Avenue that said Center for Sickle Cell Disease. It was great advertising. Everyone knew that Howard was the place to go for sickle cell care. With the closure of that building, the clinic moved into the hospital. It's the same clinic. Dr. Castro just retired this past year. I've known Dr. Castro for my entire career, even before I came to Howard. And in large part, I'm at Howard because of Dr. Castro. So treatment options are still available at Howard, and it requires an in-person evaluation to decide whether it's pain, joints, or something in between, and how best to treat that.
Okay. Still there. Bernard, still
Hello?
There? Yes.
My other question is, why, when patients come to the emergency room, they always think that these patients come to have drugs or to be drugged up rather than to relieve pain. You know, because a lot of healthcare workers, they look upon sickle cell patients as junkies in terms of coming to have intravenous drugs to take away their pain.
So what's your question, Bernard, in reference to that?
My question is, why does, when patients come to the emergency room, I mean, sometimes they overhear people talking pertaining to, oh, she's just here for the drugs, or people with sickle cell, you know, just come in there to have, they don't have the knowledge in terms of the pain that, and trouble that patients go through when they come to the emergency room.
Bernard, can you hold on? And I will have Dr. Taylor address that. And we want to let our listeners know that lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810 as we talk about sickle cell disease. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone call. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds, and we'll be taking more calls after the break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about sickle cell disease. This is National Sickle Cell Awareness Month. My guests are Nicole Williams-Millicent. She is on the advisory board of Howard University Center for Sickle Cell Disease, and also the director, Dr. James Taylor VI. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Taylor, before the break, Bernard was asking a question about how sickle cell patients are received, you know, particularly as it relates to dealing with pain management issues.
So as I said, for the last 100 years, opioids have been the mainstay of supportive care. That's good because the pain is very intense and requires very powerful drugs to relieve those symptoms. The downside is we're currently in an opioid epidemic. So, Bernard, I have seen an increasing number of people with opioid use disorder, OUD, in my clinic who don't have sickle cell disease, who are coming and telling me they have sickle cell disease. I haven't seen this in my 25 years in medicine like this. It doesn't happen every day, but it's disturbing to me. And I think that's where the stigma comes from. And certainly, we have to remember that sickle cell is a rare disease. There are only about 100,000 people in the United States, spread across a country of 330 million people. So the likelihood that you're going to find a nurse, a doctor, or a pharmacist who's really familiar with sickle cell disease is much lower than something else. And I think that's where the stigma comes from. I guess I'd turn this over to Nicole and ask her what her experience has been, if I'm correct in making these statements.
Sure. Nicole, please.
Yes. It's unfortunate that we do have that stigma. I think what sometimes people don't understand that as sickle cell patients, it's typically our last resort is to come to the hospital. Most times patients will do whatever they can do at home to try and minimize their pain because they know that when they do go to an emergency room and they're faced with people that they're not familiar with, that they're not familiar with their care, that unfortunately they do have to deal with the stigma. I think that's why, Dr. Taylor, you had mentioned earlier that it's important to have a hematologist that follows your care. And
that's
I think
right.
That also helps when you do or are faced with those situations where you're having issues within an emergency department. It's helpful to be able to have your hematologist be able to either make a phone call or be able to intervene in some way to make sure that as a sickle cell patient, you're getting the quality of care that you need.
Well, Bernard, we certainly wish your wife the best of health, and thank you so much for sharing
thank
with
you
us
very much.
This evening. Yes, sir. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Taylor, what is it that causes a flare-up, for lack of a better term, and what might reduce the frequency with which a patient has to deal with sickle cell, the flare-ups?
So this is an extremely complex question. The first answer is, I'd say, you know, in the last 5 years, I've started to do a lot of pain research. Pain researchers, it's not just a physiological response. It's not your nerves firing. It's also an emotional response. So pain is said to be an experience, meaning that it's partly what's going on in your brain and partly what's going on in your nerves. And for that reason, something that I think is underappreciated is the role of stress, just general life stress in causing pain crises. There are other things that can happen. Changes in the weather, which is changes in the barometric pressure, that will affect the amount of oxygen that's on red cells. That can cause them to sickle easier. So when a storm blows into the area, every sickle cell patient will say, boy, my joints are aching today. Mm-hmm. Exposure to extreme cold is also another trigger that we know about. And then there are the intangibles. We don't know, as Nicole described, it occurs suddenly and unexpectedly for unclear reasons when it's least convenient.
Yes, yes. There have been times when I know growing up, even going into a swimming pool, after coming out and after hours have passed, I would go into a crisis. So when we talk about extreme changes in temperature, sometimes that's even something as simple as going into a swimming pool.
Yeah. Nicole, that's how I got into pain research. Somebody told me about being in Washington on a July afternoon on sweltering 100-degree humid day, jumped into the pool and had sickling in their skin and had a pain crisis right there.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to Leslyn. This is Bernard's wife calling.
Yes,
us.
This is Bernard's wife. Hello, good evening.
How are you?
My name is Leslyn Lewis. I'm a registered nurse.
Yes, ma'am.
I've been married to Bernard for 39 years. We just celebrated an anniversary.
Congratulations.
And before we got married, Dr. Castro had Bernard come in to be tested. I was diagnosed with sickle cell at the age of 14 when I came to this country from Guyana. I'm from Guyana, South America. And when I came to this country, I was running track at Roosevelt High School. And one day, I just passed out. And so they had to transfer me to the hospital. They transferred me to Washington Hospital Center. And they ran a battery of tests, and I was diagnosed with sickle cell SS hemoglobin. So then they told my sister, because I was a child, to take me to Howard University. So I've been going to Howard University for a number of years. And Dr. Rita Matori, Dr. Castro's wife, when I got pregnant, I had to see her because she was a hematologist, gynecologist. And so the first child I had, I loved it. The baby died in me at 7 months at Howard. Anyway, I am one of the oldest people because I was in a research program at NIH. I know I'm 58 years old, and I'm one of the oldest people with sickle cell that has three children. And so one day I was working at where I was working, I got sick, and an ambulance transferred me, that's what my husband was talking about, to Georgetown Hospital. And so when I got in there, the doctor, after they set me up, the doctor said that I was just another junkie in here for a fix.
Okay.
I went to Holy Cross Hospital one day because I was in Silver Spring and I fell out in the store. And they took me to Holy Cross. And the doctor at Holy Cross also said the same thing. You know, it's very frustrating when you go in and, you know, there's not the place that I come to Dr. Wilson at Howard now. I come to a doctor beginning with K for my back pain and stuff at Howard. I used to go to Providence, but since they closed all my stuff, I come for my mammogram and everything at Howard now.
So, Leslyn, let me interrupt you, if I may. Because I don't want to get too far down into the weeds. My thing is, did you have a question or a specific point that you wanted to make sure that people were aware of?
The question that I have is, if all these hospitals know about this disease and stuff, When you go to some place other than Howard, why are you treated like a junkie?
Okay, you know? I'll have both Dr. Taylor and Nicole share their thoughts about that. Dr. Taylor.
So I would say all of the hospitals that you've mentioned for the most part are what we call community hospitals that take care of a lot of general patients. So with a rare disease, the ER patients are going to be much, much less familiar with it. This is also a problem with the way we deliver health care in this country for sickle cell disease. If you call an ambulance or if you pass out and need an ambulance, that ambulance does not take you to the hospital where you get your care. It takes you to the closest hospital, and that hospital may change from day to day. And that's what I said about fragmenting your care. If you go to six different hospitals, you're going to get six different opinions. And just the way the human mind works, you want consistency and know what to expect. That'll put you at ease. So I think that's part of the problem, that it would be great if sickle cell patients could come to one centralized place so that they could get consistent care. And I think, you know, in fairness to these other hospitals, you know, another rare blood disease is hemophilia. It's a bleeding disorder. When I was doing that type of medicine, I'd get calls, panic calls from ER physicians all the time about somebody who is in the emergency room
that was bleeding, and what do I do? They had no idea what to do. You tell them, relax, here's what you do. Step one, two, three, call me back after step three. Very easy. Unfortunately, that's not what we're doing for sickle cell, and I think that this is the result of that, very fragmented care and uninformed care. And in fairness to the ER physicians, in the middle of an opioid epidemic, they do need to pay attention to, there are people that are trying to abuse these very powerful drugs, and that really that further interferes with care for sickle cell patients.
Mm. Your thoughts about that, Nicole?
Yes, there were a number of thoughts I had as she mentioned the number of hospitals and ERs that she has had poor experiences with, and I'm sorry to hear about that. I have learned from my experience to find a hospital that's closest to me that I can have consistent care with. And I think that's important. And I think that's what has kind of helped me in looking at different geographical locations that I either move to or move from, is where are the sickle cell experts? Where are those expert centers that I want to make sure that I'm getting the best quality care at? And for me, with my relationship with Howard University Hospital, that has helped me to make sure that there is a standard of care that is applied whenever I am faced with a crisis and do have to go into the emergency department.
Leslyn, thank you so much for your phone call, and I certainly wish you the best of health.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Taylor, I don't want to miss out on the current health crisis that we're in. And what impact does the pandemic have on those who are currently afflicted with sickle cell disease? Is the risk higher for them as it is for people with hypertension, diabetes, heart disease?
So the answer is we don't know yet, but our assumption is that you're at higher risk. Why don't we know yet? We only have 100,000 patients in the, spread out all over the country, and we see different patterns of COVID-19 transmission in different parts of the country. It has tremendously interrupted care for sickle cell disease in that most clinics across the country I'm aware of shut down in March with the rest of the country. They closed and they're doing telehealth visits. At Howard, I took a different approach. We've modified some things, and we have more distancing, and we spread out our appointments, but we kept our clinic open, and we screened everyone before they ever got back around anyone else. So my point being that sickle cell doesn't stop because there's a pandemic, and there are a number of patients who are still in the emergency room, still in the hospital frequently because of this disease. And you know, if you're lucky enough to get the treatments that we have available these days, we still want to deliver those because that's going to mean you're in the emergency room a lot less than you otherwise would be. And there are sick people in the emergency room. It's a great place to be exposed to COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit more about exchange transfusion. You mentioned it briefly early in the program.
Yeah.
But let's drill down a little bit more, you know, for those who have questions about that and what it is, how it works, and what other kinds of newer treatments are available for patients.
Sure. Well, this is a very timely question, Harold. So first, I give a big plug for Howard University. Charles Drew, 70 years ago, was a professor at Howard University, and he started the entire field of blood banking and transfusion medicine. He worked closely with the Red Cross here in Washington, D.C., very famous physician for developing that whole field of transfusion medicine. He was a surgeon. So everything that I do today is probably the way he envisioned it. What an exchange transfusion is, if you think about it, the mutation that causes sickle cell and causes all the problems in sickle cell are in the red cell. So if we could fix the red cells, the disease is quote-unquote cured. What an exchange transfusion is, you come in, we hook you up to a machine that takes out 70% of your blood volume, and we transfuse in non-sickle blood. And those red cells will survive for 90 to 120 days, and before that lifespan of those red cells expires, we bring you back in and we do it all over again. And we keep your percent sickle below 50%, below 30%. It has to be individualized to a particular patient, but that can result in a tremendous alleviation of symptoms.
Just add, in regards to exchange transfusions, as a sickle cell patient, I actually was able to carry two children by having exchange transfusions. So in a way to help circumvent or to help me not to go into a sickle cell crisis, doing exchange transfusions was a way so that I did not have to cause any type of harm to my child while I was pregnant.
Exactly. So my little case example is a woman that I saw 15 years ago. She was a physician who 20 years earlier had started exchange transfusions. And as a young physician, she must have been about 30 or maybe even older than that. She was in the hospital all the time, and this was before any of the drugs existed for sickle cell. Very smart hematologist put her on exchange transfusions, and she went from being in the hospital 10, 12 times a year to never coming in the hospital for 20 years. And I saw her, she must have been in her mid-50s. She had pain in her fingers and her joints. But it wasn't the type of pain that would bring you to the emergency room, and it wasn't the type of pain that would certainly bring you into the hospital. And I couldn't find a thing wrong with her. As we talk about end organ damage, damage to your liver or your lungs or your eyes from the complications of sickle cell, I couldn't find any of that. So it really was a turning point for me in realizing that this is a potential for the right patient, a very transformative therapy that, in Nicole's case, got her through multiple pregnancies without too many complications.
Beyond the exchange transfusion, what do you see?
So I see a lot of excitement, Harold. So in 2020, we now have four approved drugs for sickle cell disease. Two are for SS sickle cell. That covers about 70% of patients. And two are for all forms of sickle cell disease. The two most recent were approved in November 2019, so right before the pandemic started. So that's kind of disrupted our distribution and our implementation, you know, prescribing these drugs widely. But now we have four drugs. And what that means is hydroxyurea was the first that was approved in 1995. We haven't had anything approved between 1995 and 2017 was the next drug. So now we have, if something doesn't work, we can try something else. So, and I'd say we now have five therapies if you include transfusions. There are some experimental therapies and even some curative therapies that are still experimental right now. One is called gene therapy, where we put a corrected hemoglobin gene into the patient's stem cells. The stem cell is what forms blood cells in the bone marrow. And so you take out the patient's stem cells, you put in a corrected gene with a virus, and you transplant their own stem cells back into them. That's still experimental, but it looks very promising. I predict in the next 4 or 5 years, we may have something that's available like that.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Robert calling from Maryland. Robert, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my questions and comments.
Yes, sir.
One thing I wanted to mention, well, I mentioned another therapy for a fix for sickle cell. At one time, I heard that blood transfusions, as someone received, well, not a blood transfusion, but a bone marrow transplant, as someone received such a transplant for leukemia, would that help, or has that been researched even more? And also, I carry the trait. And I got into an argument once with someone who tried to say that, okay, you got the trait, you're going to get the disease. No, it doesn't work like that.
Okay, and Dr. Taylor.
No. So you're right. So if you have the trait, you can potentially pass it on to a child. You would have a 50% chance of passing trait on to a child. If you're having a child with somebody else with sickle cell trait, you have a 25% chance of having a child with the disease. It cannot transform into sickle cell disease.
That's what I tried to tell him.
So transplants, bone marrow transplants, like for cancers, can work for sickle cell disease. There are lots of caveats to that, and I put it in the same class as gene therapy. The gene therapy is taking the stem cells out from the patient and fixing them in the lab and then transplanting them back into the patient. In a bone marrow transplant, you have to have a brother or sister who doesn't have the disease, and there's a 1 in 4 chance that a sibling will be a match for a transplant. And then you take the matched siblings' stem cells and transplant those into the patient.
Dr. Taylor, you said that can work. But when you say that can work, work how? Are you talking about something that would work in perpetuity or just something that would...
If it works, it is curative. And, you know, you're balancing when you...
Robert, can you turn your radio down for me, please? Sure. Go right ahead, Dr. Taylor.
When you do a bone marrow transplant, there are complications of doing that. You're given very large doses of chemotherapy sometimes radiation therapy, and there can be complications from those treatments in and of themselves. So provided you don't have complications from the treatment, the transplant, if it takes, can be completely curative. You're done with sickle cell disease. Why do I say it can work? Because it's still considered somewhat experimental.
So from your perspective, what do you believe is on the horizon as even as we try to move through this pandemic and COVID-19 is getting so much more attention, and yet, sickle cell is still rare, though it may be, is still, problematic for people like Nicole and others.
So I have a perspective on how rare sickle cell disease is. In the other part of my life, I have a partnership with some colleagues in Equatorial Africa along the Congo River. Mm-hmm. There's water everywhere, so there's malaria everywhere. See the mosquitoes flying all over the place there. 1 in 4 people in that part of the world has sickle cell trait. And that means that they have a tremendous number of sickle cell patients there. And, when you have something that affects 3 or 4 or 5% of your country, that's huge. So it's rare here, but it's not rare in Africa. And it's always on the minds of people in Africa, because 1 in 4 people has the potential of passing it on to a child. What is on the horizon? I am very excited about the gene therapy trial. So that, again, it's experimental. Like a COVID-19 vaccine, we have to prove that it works and that the complications of the treatment aren't worse than not being treated at all. Sometimes that happens in our experimental medicine treatments. There's another version of gene therapy called CRISPR-Cas. The details don't matter, but what it does is it edits the gene. And that may be a very exciting potential therapy. Those are coming down the pipeline, but they're still in trials. And you can see that with COVID-19, when companies and government get together and there's an urgency for doing something, things can be done very, very quickly. I would love to see that type of cooperation and enthusiasm for sickle cell, even though it's rare.
Thank you, Robert, so much for your phone call. Let me allow Nicole to have the last word. Your final thoughts, Nicole.
Well, my final thoughts is in regards to knowing your status, knowing if you are a carrier of sickle cell trait is very important. And I think a lot of times, as it happened in even in my family, with two people not knowing that they were trait had were carriers of trait and ended up having children, that is how the disease came to be in our family. So I think it's very important to make sure that you are screened and tested to know if you are a carrier of sickle cell trait.
How old are your children?
I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old.
And how are they? Do they have the trait?
They do have the trait, and so we constantly talk about the need of knowing what that means. And when it comes time for them to get married and have children of their own, to make sure that their spouses do not have sickle cell trait as well. The sickle cell disease.
Although, Nicole, I would add that you could. It's also possible now to avoid this completely through in vitro fertilization.
So how
so? So you do the fertilization in the test tube, and you take all the embryos that are fertilized, and before implantation, you do pre-implantation genetic testing, and you implant those without the disease. Hmm. Very possible. Very cost-effective.
That can be on the horizon for them in the much, much further distant future.
Yeah, we got to get them through high school
first. I think
it's possible
right now, yeah. But for your kids, Nicole, well in the future.
Yeah. Keep them in the books, Nicole.
Yes, that's fine. As long as possible.
I want to thank both of you for talking to us, Nicole Williams, Milititz, and Dr. James Taylor VI. I really appreciate your insight and your expertise. And for both of you, be well.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Harold.
You for taking this time to help show awareness on sickle cell. It's very important.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, September 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.